Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are still covering the North Carolina ratification debates. And actually, I'll just tell you that this is the media stuff. This is so good because this is where we get into the concepts of why did we need a Bill of Rights when we had an enumerated constitution that created boundaries. Now, so I have heard people, supposedly constitutional scholars, refer to these boundaries as parchments. Now, I just want you to understand that these parchment boundaries were actually galvanized in much greater sense than anybody would have recognized as long as the Constitution was complied to. The Constitution did not give any latitude, and as a matter of fact, they had to start violating the Constitution in regular form. The only thing, and as a matter of fact, I'll go to Hamilton and Madison, both talked about these barriers needed to be jealously guarded by the states. If you want to know who the blame really falls on, because it is natural for men to have machinations of grandeur to try to elevate their position and situation so that they obtain greater power, greater access, and so forth. Therefore, the states should have been well aware that the individual men in the federal government would start working together, we call that conspiring, in assuming powers. When somebody tells you that the concept of conspiracy is not possible, I am telling you the reason the federal government is so far outside the boundaries of the Constitution has to be because of conspiracies, where men work together in some working with lies, deceit, and other facades that the jurists such as John Marshall and Taney and others actually made assertions that were unfounded and unconstitutional, and people built upon those things. Well, he said this, and we all revered him, and none of it matters. What matters is what was said in the Constitution and what matters in the ratification debates. Had we used the ratification debates as the standards in understanding this Constitution, whenever things would go to the court and the court was forced to use the ratification debates to define what the Supremacy Clause really meant, what the Necessary and Proper Clause really meant, then you would understand, the federal government can't do these things because the Supremacy Clause only applies to the enumerated powers and laws in pursuant thereof, not implied powers, not construed powers, not usurped powers. As you know, you were listening to the only show that provides you the academic evidence. This is why we're going to spend as much time as we possibly can on the ratification debates. I want you to have access to probably the most valuable library of words and information. Forgive me, I'm not the best reader, especially when it comes to reading difficult English, the way they spoke and so forth. I mean, I don't speak that way. Sometimes I kind of do, but I'm not that bad. Anywho, I'm trying to give you a library that you can just download and listen and listen and listen till it is embedded in your brain housing group, that you understand that we are dealing with an out-of-control federal government and that they need to be dealt with, not with force, not with at least physical force and deadly force, but with political force, because they've been using all sorts of means to corrupt and further their cause, using their lucre as they continually tax and hurt America. Gotta be clear here. They have been subsidizing communism throughout the world. The people that are pulling the strings have been using America and the American tax dollars to help subsidize China and the rest of these little communist experiments around the world. FDR signed us up for these things. It was all done in the Treaty of Versailles. Anyway, I don't want to get into that because there's really, really some good resources for that. Maybe I'll have A. Ralph Epperson on to talk very specifically about those things. I would not talk to him about the Constitution because he's never read the Ratification Debates and doesn't care to. He's come up with his own conclusions regarding the Constitution and can't support his arguments in any way, ration, or form regarding the founding documents. He just reads it and like this exclusive legislative powers. They have aggrandized those outside the terms and definitions of the Constitution. And those terms and definitions are in the Ratification Debates. So if you don't understand those, you don't include those, then you have no base for your argument. You have to include how these powers were described and explained so that when the states bought into it, those were the terms of the contract. And so anyway, I know it eludes a lot of people, but I really recognize A. Ralph Epperson for his scholarly work in examining how different conspiracies actually started working together in synergies and creating other problems and so forth. So anyway, as you know, we are providing you academic-based evidence of what the solution has to be. The question we have is, are you a part of the solution? Because if you're not, folks, you're a part of the problem. And I'm not trying to insult you, but you have to start wrapping your head around this concept that if you're not engaged in the solution, you're a part of the problem. You're doing nothing. And in some ways, you're getting in the way. There's other ways that you can actually not necessarily have to spend a penny in helping and being a part of the solution. It just requires some form of engagement. Now, we offer different ways of engaging. One of those ways is by just helping us expand our listenership. We really need to start becoming a viral show in 2020. If you understand the magnitude and the importance of the election this year, we really need to have a much broader listening audience. We need your help on this. Another way you can help is you don't have to use money. But I submit that almost everybody that has a decent job should be able to save at least 1 gallon of gas a week, and just a couple of dollars a week, to be able to take that money, because I'm not asking for it. I'm doing all of this at my own expense. If we ask, if you want to receive blessings, if you want to actually have actualized blessings in your life, then get involved and start supporting this. Start consecrating your efforts by actually spending a little bit of money, but maybe not on us, but maybe on those politicians in Wyoming that will actually take the courage and commit themselves to step down and resign if they don't fully support the Constitution and the concept of enforcement and republic review. That's all we ask. Maybe you can help in that way. Maybe you can just help by giving us some of your time with, you know, doing phone calls, doing research, or what have you. Send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. We could use all the help you're willing to give us. We also ask that maybe you start thinking about how you can elevate the Constitution in your community for Constitution Day. Start working and talking to the manager. These are men. They put men and women. They put their pantyhose or pants on the same way, 1 foot at a time, 1 leg at a time, right? I mean, come on. These are just human beings. Go approach these managers, these general managers, the owners of these car dealerships and other things, especially American car dealerships. Or maybe it's Volkswagens that are made in America. it's about time we start, you know, getting these businesses to actually recognize that the Constitution is important. And maybe they can actually become the advocate for the Constitution. If they don't, if they say, no, we don't want to have, it's too political, the Constitution's too political, then you need to start boycotting these people. Call them out for actually stating that. And actually go in, you know, and say, we want to, you know, we want to kind of record this momentous occasion. We want to offer you an opportunity to recognize the Constitution and, you know, give away constitutions during Constitution Week to bring customers into your doors. And if they say, no, that's too political, then you just use that video and call them out and say, we're not going to have anything to do with this dealership. Shut them down. Let somebody else start selling American cars that want to support the Constitution. Anyway, I've ranted a little bit too much, and I want you to understand that the problems in the news are not really going anywhere fast. We promise you that there will even be more problems. There'll be more shooting, more mayhem that is coming. What we have to focus on, just like when you were going to college, you couldn't concern yourselves with all the little, you know, drama and the toxicity of the family, of your friends. You had to literally push those things away and focus on understanding how to solve the problem. That's why we're giving you this time. That's why we're taking the time in reading these nuggets of gold, these jewels, this treasure, this national treasure that gives you the insight, gives us the insight of what it's going to take back our constitutional republic. With that, we will be right back after these two promos with Mr. Iredell's great comments regarding the powers of attorney. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Now, folks, having been one who stood up in front of audiences to describe the Constitution and to help people understand that it's a contract, this one argument is probably one of the most powerful. I see more light bulbs click over the audience's head in stating and putting the Constitution into this context than I have done in lots of other ways. When I just say it's a contract, people go, and they don't understand. I have to really start connecting a lot of dots. However, when I put it into the context that Mr. Iredell uses here, it just clicks with people. So let me go into this concept of powers of attorney. And he says, did any man ever hear before, at the end of a power of attorney, it was said that the attorney should not exercise more power than was given him? Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anson and Coswell, and he should give another a power of attorney to sell his lands in Anson. Would the other have any authority to sell the lands in Coswell? Or could he, without absurdity, say, 'Tis true you have not expressly authorized me to sell lands in Coswell, but as you had lands there, and I did not say I should not, I thought I might as well sell those lands as the other.'" Now, he's just making the exact same argument that all of these people are arguing, that, oh, because, you know, you only give them these powers doesn't mean that they're going to assume these other powers. And it is absolutely absurd that they should be able to do so legally, constitutionally. In other words, for them to make the assertion that they, because we have this power to do this, we think we can also, this implied power to do this as well. And to be very clear, even Monroe pointed out, when they tried to create the Department of Transportation, he clearly pointed out that even if you collectivized these associated enumerated powers in the Constitution, you could still not create the power for them to exercise the power of creating a Department of Transportation. That an amendment must be given the Constitution for the federal government to operate the Department of Transportation. Three presidents said this. So anyway, he goes on and says, a Bill of Rights, as I conceived, would not only be incongruous, but dangerous. No man, let his ingenuity be what it will, could enumerate all the individual rights not relinquished by this Constitution. Suppose, therefore, an enumeration of many great, of a great many, but an omission of some, and that long after all traces of our present disputes were at an end, any of the omitted rights should be invaded, and the invasion of the complaint would basically be this. What would the plausible answer of the government to such a complaint? Would they not naturally say, we live in a great distance from this time when this Constitution was established. He's nailing it on the head right here, my friends. We can judge of it much better by the ideas of entertained at the time than by any ideas of our own. The Bill of Rights passed at the time showed the people did not think every power retained was not given, else this Bill of Rights was not only useless but absurd. The point is these concepts of your right to bear arms is only applied to hunting. This concept of abortion being illegal is something that is actually now a protected right, that you have a right to kill your babies. Even at birth, with infanticide, are you kidding me? There's no way the framers ever asserted those types of protections. The Bill of Rights does not protect those things. But they've basically gone on and created additional rights and have taken away rights by using these arguments that he just asserted. But we are not at liberty to charge an absurdity upon our ancestors, who have given such strong proof of their good sense, as well as their attachment to liberty. So long as the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights remain unviolated, you have no reason to complain. Right? In other words, they're not taking away your right to own a hunting gun, but you don't have a right to bear arms anymore. See my point? This is not one of them. Thus, a Bill of Rights might operate as a snare rather than a protection. If we had formed a general legislature with undefined powers, a Bill of Rights would not only have been proper, but necessary, and it would have then operated as an exception to the legislative authority in such particulars. It has this effect in respect to some of the American constitutions, where the power of the legislation are general, but where they are powers of a particular nature and expressly defined, as in the case of the Constitution before us, I think for the reason I have given, a Bill of Rights is not only unnecessary, but would be absurd and dangerous. Okay? So anyway, we come down to Mr. Davey, and he makes some very salient points as well. And he says, it is necessary in all governments, but particularly in a federal government, that its judiciary should be competent to the decision of all questions arising out of the Constitution. Now, I'm going to just editorialize real quick. It is only good decisions if they use the ratification debates. If they're working in a vacuum and interpreting and thinking, in other words, if they're allowed to use judge activism or judiciary activism at the bench, then we will find that they are going to rule in favor of violating the Constitution because they're not worried about actually understanding the terms of the Constitution. They want to start using elasticity and stretching and bending the Constitution in the directions that they see fit, which is the reason why they have obfuscated and actually have kept the ratification debates out of the judiciary hands. You need to understand that it is the ratification debates that actually snare and trap the federal government into the confines of the Constitution. Madison was pretty clear on this. But anyway, Mr. Davies goes on and says, if I understand the gentleman right, his objection was not defined jurisdiction, but to the general jurisdiction, which is expressed thus. And it, if you understand, this is, I believe, Article 3 of the Constitution. The judicial power shall have extend to all the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made of which shall be made under their authority. And that, close quote. And he says, and also the appellate jurisdiction in some instances. Every member who has read the Constitution with attention must observe that there are certain fundamental principles in it, both of a positive and negative nature, which has been intended for the general advantage of the community, ought not have been violated by any future legislation of the particular states. Every member will agree that the positive regulations ought to be carried into execution and that the negative restrictions ought not to be discarded or violated without the judiciary. The injunctions of the Constitution may be disobeyed and the positive regulations neglected or contravened. There are certain prohibitory provisions in this Constitution, the wisdom and propriety of which must strike every reflecting mind and certainly meet with the warmest approbation of every citizen of this state. It provides that no state without the consent of Congress lay any impost or duties on imports or exports except what may be absolutely necessary for the executing of its inspection laws, that no preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, and that no state shall emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender of payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, close quote. Now he says, these restrictions ought to supersede the laws of the particular states with respect to the prohibitory provision that no duty or impost shall be laid by any particular state, which is so highly in favor of us and other non-importing states, the importing states might make laws laying duties notwithstanding the Constitution might be violated with impunity if there were no power in the general government to correct and counteract the laws. Now, this is important because if you understand what was really the drive behind the secession of the South was that the North was actually laying tariffs and taxes that was hurting the South because they weren't importers. Anyway, this great objection can only be safely and completely obtained by the instrumentality of the federal judiciary. Would not Virginia, who has raised many thousand pounds of our citizens by her imports, still avail herself of the same advantage if there were no constitutional power to counteract her regulations? If cases arising under this Constitution were left to her own courts, we'll have to come back to this. And as you know, this is where they're getting into the details, the inner operings, and the definitions and terms of this contract that are actually fundamental for us to really understand where those boundaries are. We'll be right back with these comments by Mr. Davey after these two promos. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so back to Mr. Davey's comments. Just dive right back into it. He says, but we are now to look for justice to the controlling power of the judiciary of the United States. If the Virginians were to continue to oppress us by laying duties, we can be relieved by a recurrence to the general judiciary. This restriction in the Constitution is a fundamental principle which is not to be violated, but which you have been a dead letter were there no judiciary constituted to enforce obedience to it. Paper money and private contracts were in the same condition. Without a general controlling judiciary, laws might be made particular states to enable its citizens to defraud the citizens of other states. It is probable if a citizen of South Carolina owed a sum of money to a citizen in this state that the latter would be certain of recovering the full value in their courts. that state might, in future, as to have already done, make Pine Barrel acts to discharge their debts. They might say that our citizens should be paid in sterile, inarable lands at an extravagant price. They might pass some iniquitous installment laws procrastinating the payment of debts due from their citizens for years, nay, for ages. It is probable that we should get justice from their own judiciary, who might consider themselves obliged to obey the laws of their own state. Where then we are to look for justice? To the judiciary of the United States. Gentlemen must have observed that the contracted and narrow-minded regulations of the individual states, and that their predominant disposition to advance the interest of their own citizens to the prejudice of others, will not these evils be continued if there be no restraint? The people of the United States have one common interest. They are all members of the same community and ought to have justice administered to them equally in every part of the continent, in the same manner, with which same dispatch, and on the same principles. It is therefore absolutely necessary that the judiciary of the Union should have jurisdiction in all cases arising in law and equity under the Constitution. Surely there should be, and they're not talking about things that are not within the Constitution, only those things that are enumerated in the Constitution or under the Constitution, as he says. Surely there should be somewhere a constitutional authority for carrying into execution constitutional provisions, otherwise, as I have said, they would be a dead letter. In other words, the paper wouldn't be worth the writing on it. With respect to having jurisdiction of all cases under the laws of the United States, although I have a very high respect for the gentleman, I heard his objection to it with surprise. I thought that if there were any political action under the sun, it must be that the judicial power ought to be a coextensive with the legislative. The federal government ought to possess the means of carrying into laws into execution. This position will not be disputed. A government would be a felice to put into execution the laws under control of their own body. And I have no idea what fellow de se means. It's probably either French or Latin regarding the laws, and, you know, typical adages like ex post facto and so forth. If laws are not to be carried into execution by the interposition of the judiciary, how is it to be done? And so anyway, we go down now, we skip a few different comments and dissertations and so forth, and now we get into Mr. Iredell. And Mr. Iredell says this: we have been told, and I believe this was the reason why they could not concur in any general rule. I have great respect for the character of those gentlemen who formed the convention, and I believe they were not capable of overlooking the importance of the trial by jury, much less designedly plotting against it. But I firmly believe that the real difficulty of the thing was the cause of the omission. I trust sufficient reasons have been offered to show that it is in no danger. As to criminal cases, I must observe that the great instrument of arbitrary power is criminal prosecutions. By the privileges of habeas corpus, no man can be confined without inquiry, and if it should appear that he has been committed contrary to the law, he must be discharged. That diversity, which is to be found in civil controversies, does not exist in criminal cases. That diversity, which contributes to the security of property in civil cases, would have a pernicious effect in criminal ones. There is no safe mode to try these but by jury. If any man had the means of trying another his own way, it would be left to the control of arbitrary judges. No man would have that security of life, liberty, which every freeman ought to have. I presume that in no state on the continent is a man tried on a criminal accusation but by a jury. It was necessary, therefore, that it should be fixed in the Constitution that the trial should be jury in criminal cases, and such difficulties could not occur in this and in other cases. the worthy gentleman says that by not providing for in civil cases, it is expressly provided and that what is not expressly given up. Were it so, no man would be more against his constitution than myself. I should detest and oppose it as much as any man. But, sir, this cannot be the ease. I beg leave to say that the construction appears to me absurd and unnatural, as it could not be fixed either on the principles of uniformity or diversity. It must be left to Congress to modify it. If they establish it in a matter and find it inconvenient, they can alter it. But I am convinced that a majority of the representatives of the people will never attempt to establish a mode oppressive to their constituents. Well, until you get enough of the constituents to buy into oppressive government, such as the entitlement state, communism, and so forth. As it will be their own interest to take care of this right, but it is observed that there ought to be a fence provided against future encroachments of power. If there be not such a fence or, you know, obstruction or barrier, it is a cause of objection. I readily agree that there ought to be such a fence. The instrument ought to contain such a definition of authority as to leave no doubt. And if there be any ambiguity, it ought to be admitted. He says this construction is not agreeable to the people, though he acknowledges it is a right one. In my opinion, there is no man of any reason at all, but must be satisfied with so clear and plain a definition. If the Congress should claim any power not given them, it would be as bare as a usurpation as making a king of America. If this Constitution be adopted, it must be presumed that the instrument will be in the hands of every man in America to see whether authority be usurped, and any person by inspecting it may see if the power claimed be enumerated. If not, he will be known as a usurpation. There you go. So if somebody goes out and here's the problem, though, and this truly is the problem, because if you look at what has happened over the, you know, the course of the past couple centuries, we've been lied to. We've been deceived. We've been told by people that we can't question their integrity. They're a man of the court. They're, you know, they're wearing that black robe, and so they tell us so. We've got to believe them. I'm here to tell you that say it ain't so, Joe, because I can tell you that we have been lied to and lied to and lied to on these very subjects. And they have gone down great lengths in telling us that they can do anything necessary and proper, that the federal government is supreme in all things. We're going to actually get into the supremacy clause, and they're going to clearly define it for us in a few more dissertations here. But that's the beauty of these ratification debates. They actually cover all of this stuff. Now, Mr. Iredell weighs down, jumps up and says, I begged leave to explain the reason of this clause. In some of the northern states, they have emancipated all their slaves. Now, this is what I was telling you about regarding, the paradigm on slavery. If any of our slaves said he go there and remain there a certain time, they would, by the present laws, be entitled to their freedom so that their masters could not get them. This would be extremely prejudicial to the inhabitants of the southern states and prevent it. This clause is inserted into the Constitution. Though the word slave is not mentioned, this is the meaning of it. The northern delegates, owing to their particular scruples on the subject of slavery, did not choose the word slave to be mentioned. Now, I'm going to continue on because I've never read this before, but this is very important stuff, so this is important to add. So what happens is he mentions that, and then the rest of the fourth article is read without any observation. Then they get into the fifth article. And then Mr. Iredell says this. What's the fifth article? It's the amendment process, right? So anyway, Mr. Iredell then says, Mr. Chairman, this is very important clause. In every other constitution of government that I have ever heard or read of, no provision is made for necessary amendments. the misfortune attending most constitutions which have been deliberately formed has been that those formed, and I'm going to have to just, I'll just start over again from the top of what we have here, because this is really important, because they're talking about the amendment process and so forth, as well as the Amendment Protection Clause. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so, Mr. Iredell is then addressing the group after they've kind of just talked about slavery, and he says this, because they're now in Article 5, or the amendment process of the Constitution, and he says, "Mr. Chairman, this is a very important clause. In every other constitution of government that I have ever heard of or read of, no provision is made for necessary amendments. The misfortune attending most constitutions, you've got to remember, the Articles of Confederation, I'm going on a side here, the Articles of Confederation required 100% of the states to buy into. And so that was just the impossible. That's why they could never amend the Articles of Confederation, because of Rhode Island. Rhode Island was constantly, you know, screwing up the whole thing by saying, "Nope, we're not gonna let you do that. We like things the way they are." Anyway, moving on, he says, "Which have been deliberately formed has been that those who formed them thought their wisdom equal to all possible contingencies, and that there could be no error in what they did. The gentlemen who framed this Constitution thought with much more diffidence of their capabilities, and undoubtedly, without a provision for amendment, it would have been more justly liable to objection, and the characters of its framers would have appeared much less meritorious. This, indeed, is one of the greatest beauties of the system, and should strongly recommended it to every candid mind. The constitution of any government which cannot be regularly amended when its defects are experienced reduces the people to this dilemma. They must either submit to its oppressions or bring about the amendments for more or less by a civil war." And what they're just captioning, it basically lays down the argument for the Convention of States, because
there is no defect that the Convention of States is truly trying to fix. Our problems have nothing to do with a defect in the Constitution. Our problems have everything to do with the federal government not complying to the Constitution. A balanced budget amendment? Why do we need a balanced budget amendment when they're spending money that they have no authorization to spend money on? Why would we need term limits when, you know, Congress should not be able to do anything and everything that they want to do? Even if they want to steep themselves in corruption, the Constitution still limits them to the enumerated powers. And if you don't like going to war here, going to war there constantly because of those things, then you vote these folks out. Because that's the only thing that they really can have a ill effect on us. Anyway, I go on, and actually he goes on, and this is kind of a cumbersome statement. He goes, happy this, the country we live in, the Constitution before us, if it be adopted, can be altered with as much regularity and as little confusion as any act of assembly. Not indeed quite so easily, which would be extremely impolitic. But if a happy circumstance that there is a remedy in the system itself for its own failability, so that the alterations can without difficulty be made, agreeable to the general sense of the people, let us attend to the manner in which amendments may be made. The proposition for amendments may arise from Congress itself when two-thirds of both houses shall deem necessary. If they should not, and yet amendments be generally wished for by the people, two-thirds of the legislature of the different states may require a general convention for the purpose, in which case Congress, under the necessity of convening one, any amendments which either Congress shall propose or which shall be proposed by such general convention are afterwards to be submitted to the legislatures of the different states or conventions called for that purpose, as Congress shall think proper and upon the ratification of 3/4 of the states will become part of the Constitution. By referring to the business to the legislature's expense would be saved, and in general it may be presumed they would speak the genuine sense of the people. It may, however, on some occasions be better to consult an immediate delegation for that special purpose. This is therefore left discretionary. It is highly probable that amendments agreed to in either of these methods would be conducive to the public welfare when so large a majority of the states consented to them, and in one of the modes an amendments are now wished for may in short time be made to this Constitution by the states adopting it. And here's another problem with the Convention of States, is that not any of the amendments are really, you know, a silver bullet to getting the federal government into compliance, which is why there's so few people that are, you know, demanding, and they're trying to create this viral effect, trying to get people really up on, you know, term limits. You know, if you really think about it, had we had term limits, John Quincy Adams would not have been able to promote the abolition of slavery in the Senate. He would not have been able to become an advocate in fighting slavery. And we probably would have been, you know, maybe a much more oppressive nation because of that. So, you know, we need to start understanding that when we start limiting people, we not only limit the Constitution limits them from being able to do bad things. If they be of good merit, it will be judged worthily, and they will be worthy of being able to stay in Congress. However, if there is a hard limit, regardless of how good the person is, they cannot stay. They cannot serve the public. Now, there's lots of other things that aren't talked about, like compensation and so forth, but I don't want to digress. Anyway, Mr. Iredell goes on and says this. It is, however, to be observed that the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article are protected from any alteration till the year of 1808. In addition to this protection of the slave trade, there is also a protection that the states cannot lose their suffrage in the Senate without their consent. So in other words, Utah, why is it that you have surrendered your consent to suffrage when you never gave consent? You should be still appointing, and every state that who has not ratified the 17th Amendment should go back to appointing their senators, because that protection clause is clear. Your suffrage cannot be taken from you without your consent. So in other words, those who wrote the 17th Amendment really didn't understand the Constitution, that little protection clause even existed. But anyway, I go on, and he goes on and says, and in order that no consolidation should take place, it is provided that no state, by any amendment or alteration, be ever deprived often of equal suffrage in the Senate without his own consent. And oh, by the way, that's exactly what I just mentioned. The first two prohibitions are with respect to the census according to that which is direct taxes is imposed, and with respect to the importation of slaves. As to the first, it must be observed that there is a material difference between the northern and southern states. The northern states have been much longer settled and are much fuller of people than the southern, but have not land in equal proportion, nor scarcely slaves. The subject of this article was regulated with great difficulty and by a spirit of concession which it would not be prudent to disturb for a good many of years. In 20 years, there will probably be a great alteration, and then the subject may be reconsidered with less difficulty and greater coolness. In the meantime, the compromise was upon the best footing that could be obtained. See, there you go. He's kind of explaining why they went down this path. A compromise likewise took place in regard to the importation of slaves. It is probable that all the members are reprobated in this human traffic, but those of South Carolina and Georgia would not consent to an immediate prohibition of it. There you go. One reason of which was that during the last war they lost a vast number of Negroes, which loss they wish to supply. In the meantime, it is left to the states to admit or prohibit the importation, and Congress may impose a limited duty upon it. After 1808, the federal government takes full cognizance and authority over the importation of people, period, that the states no longer have that ability. That was only protected for 20 years so that the Carolina and Georgia could actually recover their lost slaves. Anyway, Mr. Bass then says this, it was plain that the introduction of amendments depended altogether on Congress. Well, Mr. Bass was incorrect, and so Mr. Iredell says this, it was very evident that it did not depend on the will of Congress, for that the legislatures of two-thirds of the states were authorized to make application for calling a convention to propose amendments, and on such application, it is provided the Congress shall call such convention so that they will have no option. And so, just so you understand, when the states call for a convention, who pays for that? Well, who paid for the original constitutional convention? It's because it's going to be the same. So if the convention of states actually goes through, what will end up happening is the states will be flipping the bill for a perpetual convention that will solve nothing, because our problem has nothing to do with deficits of the Constitution. It has to do with enforcing and compliance. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.